So this morning I'm going to give my second talk on nature and using the Mountains and Water Sutra by Dogen as my reference. So last time I talked about the etymology of suture and sutra, that it's the same etymology. Sutras, scriptures, and in this case, nature, sutures us when we feel off balance, confused, stressed out. We can read the different Buddhist teachings, but we can also be in nature, and that's what this is about. It was audacious of him to name this a sutra, the Mountains and Water Sutra. It's the only thing he wrote he called a sutra. But he lived in nature. He imbibed nature, and nature made him whole, and nature can make us whole, return us to our original wholeness. We're really lucky we have a lake here, aren't we? And a beautiful backyard, and we do our walking meditation. We have a trail on back to help us suture, because we've been torn apart. So Dogen says to know the stability that I'm saying suturing brings as it heals, we have to enter the mountain. Enter the mountain. So when I was pretty young, probably as young as 6 or 7 in the mountain, I would go into the mountains every summer with my parents. But not till I was probably my 5th or 6th year did I have an experience of really entering the mountain. I was on a long hike going up to the top of a mountain with my parents. And there were trail signs along the way and markers, and I was paying attention to every 10th of a mile because it was getting hard. Then we, all of a sudden, there were no trees and we were at timberline. And there were no markers anymore. There were no signposts anymore. It was very disorienting. Very disorienting. And yet, my mom was ahead of me and she was hiking and I didn't want to give up. So I kept going. But without the markers, without the signposts, what does our little mind do? Well, at some point, I just started being with my breathing, being with my steps, just as Paul teaches when he takes people into the mountain. And I really entered the mountain. I really saw the mountain. But before that, I hadn't seen the mountain. I'd only seen the, 1.9, only 1.8. Oh, this backpack is heavy. Take this, Mom. But there I was, and I finally entered the mountain. So that when I went got to the top of the mountain, and my mother said, "Oh, there's a book to sign your name here. You may be the only child or adolescent who's done this." I thought, that's ridiculous. I'm just enjoying being here. I didn't say that to my mother. I thought, wow, here's the sky, here's the mountain, here's the fresh air. Everything is here, so who do I care about? Who's the first to come or signing my name? Although I did sign my name because my mother asked me to. So Dogen says, mountains are true their true expression is flow. And Lao Tzu says, nature does not hurry, yet everything is accomplished. Nature does not hurry, yet everything is accomplished. So in our meditation, partly about entering mountain stillness that is right here, tapping into it. So then we can act with some stability. And when we do that, then there's some joy, some compassion, some love, some generosity that just flows out of us. It It takes a while, but it happens to everybody who's a serious meditator. So when I started sitting meditation many years ago, when I started Zen practice many years ago, my first teacher said only one thing. I said, well, what do I do? You know, what are the practices here with Zen? And what do I study and what a ritual do I learn? He said, just come sit with me every morning. Then I said, well, what else? He said, no, just come sit with me. So for the first 2 years about, I did that. I did that. And when I sat in the Zendo, which was actually bigger than this Zendo, he was in the front, and he sat like a mountain. But he was like a very small mountain. He was a 4 foot, 11 foot mountain. It was not a scary mountain, but like a mountain, like a mountain. Tapping into that stability, that quietness that's right here. That's right here. And yet, in his daily life, he seemed to be flowing. Because he knew this quietness in his daily life, he could just do lots of different things and be lots of different people in many different situations. So now I want to get into what I talk about in the program, which is some of the things Dogen actually said. The first one in the program is... and this is Dogen, so just listen and don't try to figure it out, because if you do, you'll get a headache. There are mountains hidden in treasures. There are treasures hidden in mountains. There are mountains hidden in swamps. There are mountains hidden in the sky. There are mountains hidden in mountains. There are mountains hidden in hiddenness. Investigate mountains fully. So there are mountains hidden in treasures. There are treasures hidden in mountains. Once my teacher said to me, you have a great treasure in you. Someone may try to take it from you. Do not let anyone take it from you. So we don't think we have this treasure here. So we think some Buddha or some Wizard of Oz or some God, we can give it to us, but it's right here. It's so easily we give it away when it's right here. It's right here. That's pretty often we do that, but we need reminders that it's right here. And that even if it's covered up with all kinds of crud, it's still here. It's still alive. It's still shining. There are mountains hidden in swamps. So right in the swamp, right in the swamp where the water is all polluted. Have you polluted your minds yet today? Or did you come right here with your beginner's mind the moment you woke up? Maybe you did. Maybe you did. On the other hand, maybe you didn't. Maybe your mind is full of all kinds of stuff. There are mountains hidden in swamps. Let settle. Let it settle. And it becomes clear. Even the most turbid water becomes clear. It takes patience, I know, but you just let it settle. You just let it settle. There are mountains hidden in the sky. The sky. The sky just accepts whatever weather comes. Clouds, blue sky, rain, storms, whatever. It embraces it. And in the storm, your stillness is still there. Still there, right in the storm. But sometimes it's too hidden to see it, and we don't see it. We don't see it. Like last time I talked about the solo retreats. Paul, you didn't hear this. Last time I talked about the solo retreats we did in the Wind Rivers. Overnight retreats. We all went to different parts. And we did solo meditation retreats all night. And the weather was nice and clear until it wasn't nice and clear, until it started storming. And it stormed all night and we had no sleeping bags. And it certainly seemed like any kind of stillness was really hidden. But we stayed. We stayed. It's good to stay in your zazen. You want to run away from your zazen. But if you stay, if you just let the refuse settle, let the turbidity settle, you're opening up to what is, and you discover stillness right there. I'm not saying that I discovered any stillness during that night. But I stayed, and right in the hiddenness, the ability to stay gives you some composure, gives you some peace of mind, because you just do it. You just commit yourself something, and you just do it. There are mountains hidden in mountains. There are mountains hidden in hiddenness. Mountains hidden in hiddenness. Dogen. So your true nature is hidden from so-called you. So-called you. So-called Tim. So-called Jim. So-called Paul. Your conscious mind doesn't know. Because your conscious mind is always struggling to get somewhere, or to manage something, or to control something. Always measuring the amount of miles, 2.8 miles, 3.2 miles, the next 0.4 miles, the last 0.4 miles, right? But beyond your conscious mind, your big mind does. Your big mind, your big heart does. So Basho's poem, Mount Fuji, veiled in misty rain. How wonderful. Veiled in misty rain. How wonderful. Sometimes it's veiled. Sometimes we don't see it. Still here, still permeating all life. Wonderful. Whether you see it or not. Whether you're so-called enlightenment or enlightened or not, whatever that means. I was just interviewed upstairs by some people who are doing a movie on Bob Pirsig. Now, what did they asked me all kinds of questions about enlightenment. That's what they're interested in. Everybody wants something. You want maybe at 10.0 miles. That's when we get enlightenment. Oh, okay. But right here, just be here. Settle into it. This is where your treasure is. Right here. This is your treasure. Even if you don't feel it, even if it's hidden, it's here. Dogen says, investigate mountains fully. So, investigate mountains fully. Thoroughly investigate stillness. What does Tim mean by stillness? I don't feel that stillness. Is the stillness I feel the same as Rosemary feels? What is stillness? What does Tim mean when he says you can discover stillness within yourself and live with it? What is it that the mountain flows? What is that? But you do that with gentleness. You don't do that with your calculating mind. You do that with gentleness from your heart. From your heart. So now I'm going to move on to water. That's all this is, the Mountain and Water Sutra. I spent 1.5 talks on mountain, and now I'm going to spend a half talk or so on water. The water. To consider water as only flowing, says Dogen, is to slander water with the word flowing. When you investigate the flowing of a handful of water and the not flowing of it, full mastery of all things is immediately present. So we think water flows, but fish don't see it that way, just like we're astonished by the ideas of mountains flowing. Fish may be astonished by the idea that water is flowing, right? Sure. We've all got our own little telescope, as Kategori used to say. We just see this part of the world through our little telescope. Well, that's all right. That's all right. Beyond our little telescope is wonderful spaciousness right here. Right here. So, from your program, some beings see water as a jeweled ornament. Some beings see water as wondrous blossoms, Hungry ghosts see water as raging fire or pus and blood. Dragons see water as a palace or a pavilion. Some beings see water as the seven treasures or a wish-granting jewel. Some beings see water as a forest or a wall. So in my book, which has just come out, Zen in the Age of Anxiety, I talk about my relationship with my friend Jerry, who was a surfer guy. He was also my next-door neighbor, a surfer guy. Jerry was about 6'3 or 6'4. He seemed like he kept growing. And I was maybe 5, and I'm 5'6. Maybe I was 5'5 back then when we started this, 5'4. But he was my good friend. And his relationship to water was to ocean. It was to ocean because he surfed. And when I was younger, ocean always seemed far away, distant to me. Contrasted to my pool learning, I learned to swim in a pool. Well, the pool is only 35 feet long, it's 16 feet wide, you can see the bottom, everything is clear. So I didn't know the ocean, and I was kind of scared by the ocean. But Jerry lived in water. And when he was surrounded by water, I could watch, and he could see certain patterns of waves when they were coming. I couldn't even see the patterns. I don't know. But he could just see them. He just watched them. Where the undercurrent was, where the pull was. He knew ocean, and he released his body over and over. And when I watched him, I thought, is he riding waves, or are the waves carrying him? He had to completely release to do that, completely release. This is a long time ago before surfing was a big deal. So his board was huge. We had no styrofoam surfboards. This was one of those huge wooden boards. And there were not very many other people there either. Not very many others. And for a while, I was just there watching for a while. And sometimes he would get lost in a trough. Is he going to come up? And then he would come up. Sometimes on the board, sometimes not on the board. Sometimes the board would come up, and sometimes he'd come up from the place. But he was in it. He was completely in it. So when I think of Jerry surfing, I think of Michelangelo. Michelangelo's approach to sculpting. Michelangelo said that he didn't actually create images. He just released them from the stone. He would patiently chip away until the perfect figure had always been within the stone was revealed. Just chip away until the perfect figure that's inside us is revealed. Not perfect in contrast to imperfect. Not that kind of perfection. So Zen practice removes little by little our domination by our chattering so we can return to our uncarved nature, realize it, and bring it alive. And Dogen says, we can fully enter the mountain and fully enter the water. The non-dual dharma, the mountains and waters as our own body and mind. Our own body and mind as the mountains and waters. Our personal bedroom. Our personal bedroom. Dogen says, to hear sounds with the whole body and mind, to see forms with the whole body and mind, one understands them intimately. We fall through our practice into our uncarved nature. We can't get it. We fall into it. We fall into it. We realize these mountains and waters as our own body and mind with no beginning or end. And then we can speak and act out of this uncarved nature with some generosity, with some kindness to ourselves and to others. and the only thing that limits us are the ones that limits we have set for ourselves. Through meditation, we learn the backward step, says Dogen, that turns our light inward to illuminate ourselves. That's pretty cool, pretty wonderful. So when we've taken that backward step, then we can take a step forward. Then we can let it go and then take another step. This is what I call, as those of you who've been hearing me for the last few years, turtle practice. I'm trying to bring my teacher's way alive here. He brought his teacher's way alive, and his teacher brought his teacher's way alive. Turtles, right? So you know about the myth about turtles? The world turtle supports the earth on its back. The world turtle rests on the back of an even larger turtle, which itself is part of a call of increasingly larger turtles that continues indefinitely. Turtles all the way down. Turtles all the way down. We call that lineage in Zen. Lineage. Or transmission, but that sounds fancy. It's just turtles all the way down. That's all it is. Some of them are mythical turtles. Some of them are real turtles. And people argue, which is the real turtle? Which is the mythical turtle? Turtle doesn't care. It doesn't care. Call it whatever you want to call it. Argue whatever you want to argue. Turtles all the way down. So when I was young, before I started doing the ocean with Jerry and learned to be in the ocean with him, I went to my grandmother's house. Every time my parents went on vacation, they shipped me to my grandmother's, just like my daughter. My daughter comes here in a couple of weeks, and she takes off. She brings her boys. She takes off. And then she passes through sometimes. Hi. And then we say, Aaron, and she says, gotta go. She takes off. But it's wonderful to be a grandparent. It's wonderful. I feel very fortunate. So I used to stay at my grandma's. And my grandma had a house in Sea Cliff in San Francisco. And she had right over the ocean was her house. And she had ocean frontage, only you had to go down this winding path to get to the ocean. And she wouldn't let me go. She wouldn't let me go. But I heard the waves as a boy in the house. The waves. The twisting, the thrashing, the loud, uncaring noise, the unpredictability of the waves. And it comes to me that was scary, but my grandmother let me sleep in her bed. At night. That's when you really heard the waves, because there was no TV. I don't know if there was, there must have been radio, but we didn't have any radio. And at night, the waves were really loud. So she let me sleep in her bed, and I felt safe, but I still heard them. So the waves, wild, just like the waves of our thinking. The waves of our thinking sometimes are pretty wild, aren't they? Pretty wild. Pretty wild. The only laws of the waves are the laws of wind and gravity as it affects the waves, the pull of the other planets as it affects the waves. And my grandmother had a picture window in her dining room overlooking the ocean. And I liked to look at it, out of it. But I got dizzy because it just went on and on. It just went on and on. It made me dizzy. And so when my grandmother saw that I got dizzy, she really wouldn't let me go down there. She said, no, you can't go down. I said, Grandma, there's a trail. I see other people going down. She said, no, you can't go. But I wanted to. I realized that the best thing was to go into it. So, but finally, when I was 13 or 14 with Jerry, I did go into it. And I wasn't dizzy anymore once I really went into it. Wasn't dizzy. So Zen practice. Something huge just beyond our line of sight. Something huge. It's not a thing. I say something. No. Something huge that is not a thing beyond our line of sight. Makes us dizzy sometimes. Makes us dizzy. We want to retreat to our little repeating and regretting mind. I can't measure it. Our thinking can't reach it. But we can go into it. We can go into it. Little by little, not forcefully. Not forcefully. I wasn't ready to go into the ocean till I spent a lot of time with it, a lot of time watching Jerry. I'm thinking, well, that's the wrong ocean for him to go into. We should be going to Southern California or Hawaii Ocean. This ocean, we didn't have wetsuits then. It must have had them. This ocean is too cold to go into. That was my idea. But actually, if you just go in, little by little, it's wonderful. It's wonderful. So I learned little by little, no distinction between the shallowness of the pool that I went in and the depth of the ocean, little by little. And later in my zazen, between little mind, little anxious, grabbing mind, and big mind. We have that ability to just be with, regardless of what's flowing around and within us, regardless of whether it's a pool or the ocean. So a final phrase of Dogen's. Final phrase of Dogen's. Water is the true dragon's palace. So the dragon, if you learn about Chinese history, you know about the prominence and the prevalence of the dragon in Chinese history. If you go to MIA and see Chinese art, you'll see the dragons proliferating. And when Buddhism came into China, the dragons had been proliferating for a couple thousand years. But immediately, the Buddhists were not dumb. So they appropriated the dragons. They appropriated them into everything. They said, oh, these dragons are just nagas. Well, because in Indian Buddhism, and before Buddhism in India, there was a naga. There was a serpent in Hinduism. And so, very, very similar. Both of them shapeshifters. Both of them shapeshifters. The naga in Indian Buddhism, in India, shifts between the serpent form and the human form. And that's why he helped Buddha. Remember, he helped Buddha in lots of ways. And the dragon in China, many dragons are made up of the horns of a stag, the forehead of a camel, the eyes of a demon, the neck of a snake, the belly of a sea monster, the scales of a carp, the claws of an eagle, the pads of a tiger, and the ears of an ox. So what does all this have to do? Well, this is fluidity, isn't it? This is fluidity. Within our mountain steadiness, with our mountain stillness, we can be shapeshifters. We are shapeshifters. Dragons, serpents, in water, on land, in the mountains, by the lake, in the swamp. Little by little, we discover our true nature, our shape-shifting nature. With mountain stillness at the center. Mountain stillness at the center. Acting from our uncarved nature is another way to talk about it. Acting from our uncarved nature. What form is the dragon taking now? What form is the naga taking? It's coming from something uncarved. It's manifesting something uncarved that can't be measured by 2.8 miles or 3.1 miles or 3.6 miles, right? And it makes you dizzy because you're not used to it. Ah! Oh, I know. But that's good. Well, don't overdo it, though. Don't be macho about it. Just notice the dizziness and little by little, settle into being with it right here. Right here. So I want to close with a poem by Lao Tzu, because I don't know why. Lao Tzu says, the sages of old were fluid as melting ice, whole as an uncarved block of wood. Oh, that's why I'm doing this. Receptive as a valley, turbid as muddied water. Who can be still until their mud settles and the water is cleared by itself? Can you remain tranquil until right action occurs by itself? The master doesn't seek fulfillment. Only those who are not full are able to be used. This brings the feeling of completeness. Only those who are not full are able to be used. This brings the feeling of completeness. Sutured. Sutured.